Mr. Stollard. We're ready to hear from you, and do you wish to reserve any time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor, if I could reserve 5 minutes.
Yes, sir, 5 minutes.
Thank you. May it please the Court, my name is Craig Stollard on behalf of the Commonwealth in this appeal. The issue is whether or not the police officer had reasonable suspicion to believe that Mr. Collins was violating the Richmond City Noise Ordinance when he stopped the vehicle back on, I believe it was March 23rd, 2015. The officer heard Mr. Collins' vehicle from a distance of 2.5 to 3 car lengths. At that time, the car's music playing loud enough that he could hear it as loud music and also could hear Collins' trunk rattling as it drove by.
Mr. Stollard, this is Judge Petty. Let me pose this question to you. The purpose of a reasonable suspicion detention is to investigate further whether a crime has occurred. Exactly what kind of investigation would an officer conduct when you're talking about someone playing the radio too loud?
Your Honor, that's a good question. I'm not sure what further investigation...
What's a good answer?
Honestly, I'm not sure what further investigation will be done, because obviously once he stops the vehicle, the driver's likely going to turn the radio down in order to be able to speak with the police officer, and then recreating that noise to do any specific investigation would probably be difficult, if not impossible, to do at that point. Now, it's clear that I think only reasonable suspicion is needed to stop a vehicle in this case. The fact there may not be any need for any further investigation, I mean, might be an issue as well. I think, again, here, that the fact that when he heard the noise, it was very loud and it was relatively close to the 50-foot limit.
So are we really talking about a probable cause standard as opposed to reasonable suspicion?
Given the elements of this offense, that might be an issue. The court went on the basis of reasonable suspicion, and I think that even if the issue was probable cause, I think here they had ample evidence for that as well. I think they actually had sufficient evidence to find him guilty of the offense, so I think clearly also probable cause and reasonable suspicion. But I think under either standard, the stop in this case was correct and unjustified under the Fourth Amendment.
Well, is there anything in the, this is Judge Huff, is there anything in the record that would allow us to determine what distance was involved for 2.5 to 3 car lengths? If the cars were 17, 18 feet long, that's a 50-foot distance. But is there anything, any basis in the record for us to reach that conclusion?
There is not, Your Honor. To the extent the officer attempted to testify to the length of the vehicle Collins was driving, there was a hearsay objection. There was some discussion about whether or not they could take judicial notice of that, but ultimately the objection was sustained. So I don't believe that testimony is actually part of the record. There was some testimony that he was using the length of the car length as just a standard unit of measure. The distances I used in my brief, I think, are conservative. I think a small car might be 12 to 14 feet. Now, whether he had them on a small car, mid-sized, large car is unclear.
If we apply the reasonable suspicion standard, is it necessary that the officer was beyond the 50-foot circumference when he heard the music, or is it simply sufficient for him to say, that music was so loud, I wasn't beyond 50 feet, but I'm pretty confident that had I been, I would have heard it, and that be the investigation?
I think the 2 times he heard them, or testified he heard the music and put a distance to it, I think are both relevant. One, that it was so loud that it would be reasonable for him to think that if he was to back up 5 or 10 feet, it would still be plainly audible. And I also think the fact that he could still hear it at a distance of 100 feet, it would be reasonable to think that he could still hear it if he was half as close as the 100 feet. So I think both of those taken together give him reasonable suspicion and or probable cause and or sufficient evidence to show he's actually in violation of the statute, actually beyond reasonable doubt. So I think either one of them by itself might be sufficient, but certainly both of the things he testified to regarding distance and how he heard the music definitely go to the point that he had at least reasonable suspicion or probable cause to stop the vehicle at that point. There's nothing here to indicate that plainly audible has to be at a certain volume. If he could hear the music from 100 feet, that's plainly audible. If he could hear it from 40 feet, that's plainly audible. If he could hear it loud enough at 40 feet, it would be reasonable for him to say, well, it's just 10 feet further away. That would still be plainly audible. That is a reasonable action by the police officer in making those determinations. So,
Solid, this is Judge Alston. I'm going to take you back, if I could, to the standard of review in this case. In this case, did the trial judge make a legal determination or did he make a factual determination in resolving the issue before him?
It appears the judge made a legal determination. The court essentially found, or at least implicitly, that the noise ordinance at issue was unconstitutionally vague and that it would be difficult to put on proof to prove the offense occurred. Therefore, you really couldn't prove reasonable suspicion that the offense was being violated. There was no factual finding that he could not have heard it or it was not plainly audible. So the court, I think, definitely made a legal conclusion, not a factual conclusion.
If we were to determine from reviewing the record that the trial judge made a factual determination with regard to the ability to hear the music, would that undermine the theory of your case?
Given the testimony of the police officers, I don't believe the judge found that the police officer's testimony was plainly wrong or, was inherently incredible. If the court made a finding that there's no way he could have heard it from a distance, I would then have to argue that there's no evidence to support that because clearly that would be contradictory to the officer's testimony, which he did not find to be inherently incredible.
To the extent that the trial court made some type of determination that the statute, the ordinance, was unenforceable because it was unconstitutionally vague, didn't we pretty much dispatch that argument in our recent Freeman decision? That is, that a police officer is entitled to enforce an apparently valid statute ordinance on the books until some court determines it's not valid?
That's correct. I mean, whether or not a statute or ordinance is unconstitutional does not impact an officer's good faith reliance on that statute to enforce the laws. And in this case, the officer acted in good faith. He had he articulated a reason why he made the stop that he did. I believe it's supported by the evidence and the facts. So that argument, I think, or the legal finding by the trial court definitely was an error.
Mr. Stallard, if I could go back to your previous answer. When the trial judge was discussing the factual circumstances of the case, and I'm reading from the transcript essentially, it says, quote, it's got to be plainly audible, and we're not even sure what that means. I guess it means you can hear it plainly and clearly. He said faintly, and you got car vehicles before that. It's 100 feet. It was faint. I just can't. What do you do with that sort of, it's a stream of consciousness that the trial judge is providing, but what do you do with that, sir?
Well, again, Your Honor, we're dealing with a distance of 100 feet, which is twice what the ordinance mandates. So even if you want to say that faint is not plainly audible, the issue, either both for probable cause or reasonable suspicion, the issue is, would it be reasonable for the officer to believe that if he was 50 feet closer, would it be plainly audible? Because, again, we don't have to have evidence of guilt beyond a reasonable doubt at this point. So even if the court made a finding that 100 feet, okay, it's not plainly audible, that still does not rule out the possibility that it would be reasonable for the officer to believe that at 50 feet, it is, in fact, plainly audible. Again, going back to what the officer heard when he was closer to the vehicle, not how loud the music was there when he was also fairly close to the 50-foot limit, somewhere, I'd say, within maybe 10 feet of the 50-foot. It was loud enough for him to characterize it as loud, and again, you could hear the trunk of the car vibrating. So I think those two statements taken together, both from approximately 40 feet and again from 100 feet, that he could hear it. And again, we only need reasonable suspicion or probable cause, depending on how the court wants to do the analysis.
Just so you're aware, you're entering your rebuttal 5 minutes. You can proceed, of course. It's up to you.
All right. Did I answer your question, Judge Alston?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Okay. If the court has no further questions, I'll reserve the balance of my time.
Very well. Ms. Dalton?
Good morning. May it please the court, on behalf of Charvel Collins, Mr. Collins is asking this court to affirm the trial court because the trial court properly granted his motion to suppress because there was not reasonable articulable suspicion for the stop.
Ms. Dalton, can I try to hone in here on the issue before us? You seem to concede that the statute is not unconstitutionally vague. Am I reading your brief correctly?
Yes, sir. We are not challenging the constitutionality of the statute, and we agree with the Attorney General's position that even if this statute is unconstitutionally vague, that the officer was certainly able to enforce it on the date in question.
Your entire argument is that there was no reasonable suspicion that the ordinance was being violated.
Correct.
Is that fair?
Yes. Based on the record, at the only time that Officer Kennery was at a distance of more than 50 feet, he described the music that he heard as faint. And it's our argument that faint is clearly not equivalent to plainly audible.
Okay, let me stop you with that one, because this is I think, the crux of the case. Do you have any support for that statement? Has any court defined what plainly audible means?
To my understanding, no Virginia court has defined plainly audible specifically within the context of this statute.
Go ahead, otherwise,
to my knowledge, and if the court's aware of that, perhaps I'm mistaken.
If the police officer thought, maybe even mistakenly, but suppose the police officer thought that plainly audible simply means you can hear it, would that be a mistake of law?
I would suggest that is a mistake of law, because Virginia courts have long held that the plain, ordinary, obvious meaning of statute is always preferred, and both plainly, the word plainly and the word audible, in their ordinary meanings, I would suggest, mean that the music must easily able to be heard from the distance specified by the statute.
If that is a mistake of law, why wouldn't this case be controlled by Hine versus North Carolina, the recent United States Supreme Court case that held that a reasonable mistake of law does not implicate the Fourth Amendment?
My understanding of Hine v. North Carolina is that mistake of law would only justify the stop where the statute was ambiguous. And in this case,
I don't think that's exactly what it says. It says that the mistake must be those of reasonable men. And I don't understand why it's not reasonable for a person to assume that plainly audible just means I can hear it.
Well, Your Honor, I would suggest that it's not reasonable for someone to think that plainly audible means that you can hear it faintly, and that in this particular case, the officer did not, there was no testimony as to what plainly audible meant to him.
But I mean, if the term is open to discussion, and apparently it is, as you and the Attorney General don't seem to be able to agree on what it means, what's the poor police officer out there to do when he's confronted with enforcing an ordinance? He can only use his best judgment, and then we second guess him. Is that where we are?
Well, I would suggest that if this court were to find that there's any ambiguity in the statute, then it still must be strictly construed against the Commonwealth, and the ambiguity must be resolved in Mr. Collins' favor as the accused.
Counsel, would you suggest to this court that what the trial court did was make a factual determination or a legal determination?
Judge Alston, I believe that the court made both a legal determination, that there was not reasonable articulable suspicion for the stop, and that the court made a factual determination in the portion of the trial court's ruling that Your Honor previously read, that the trial court found that at the only distance of more than 50 feet, specifically at a distance of 100 feet, that the music was faint, and it's clear that the trial court found that faint did not equal plainly audible.
But we're not enforcing the ordinance. We're investigating the ordinance. So why wouldn't you be able to conclude that a reasonable police officer at that point would freeze the situation, move to within 50 feet, and then determine whether the ordinance is being violated?
Because in this case, the officer was able to observe perceive the vehicle at both distances, a distance of less than 50 feet, and a distance of greater than 50 feet, and he observed it from a closer distance at first as it passed him, and then as he was able to follow it and observe it at a distance that he approximated was 100 feet, it was at that point faint. So he was able to determine, basically to investigate before stopping the vehicle, that it was not plainly audible at a distance of greater than 50 feet.
But I think that takes us down the road that Judge Betty and I have the same concern, and that is that argument may well be sufficient to prevent your client being convicted of the offense which caused the basis for the stop. But does that get you over the hurdle of a reasonable articulable suspicion for the stop?
I believe it does in this case. And to further address one of the court's previous questions, could the officer just say it so loud that he knew it could be heard by 50 feet or more? Well, in this case, the officer didn't say that. And additionally, in the record, as the court has pointed out, there is no evidence from which this court can conclude what distance 2.5 to 3 car lengths are. And so the only distance that we're left with is 100 feet, approximately 100 feet. Which
is there any evidence that the police officer required any enhancement to his hearing ability to hear this faint music, that he had to cup his hand behind his ear or use some kind of sound enhancement device?
I don't believe so, Your Honor.
So why isn't that plainly audible? If without any enhancement, without anything other than just listening, you could hear it?
Because I would suggest that the plain meaning of plainly audible, the common meaning, would be easily able to be heard.
But you don't have any support for that. You have no citation to any authority. That's just your belief. And the police officer obviously had a different opinion. Why isn't his just as likely to be right as yours?
Your Honor, my answer is based on just the common meanings of the words in the statute, which I think the law requires us to interpret them that way. And if the court has no other questions, I have no additional arguments.
All right, very well. Thank you so much, Mr. Stollard. Your remaining 5 minutes.
Your Honor, to answer your question earlier about has any court defined plainly audible, doing a multi-state search, there really aren't any jurisdictions that have bothered to define it. I think that might be likely due to the fact it has a common ordinary meaning. The one place I did find some definitions was out of Florida. Ordinarily, I might be hesitant to say do what Florida does, but their definition here seems to be kind of capture the common sense definition, which is that can be clearly heard outside the vehicle by a person using his normal hearing faculties at a distance of, in their case, it was 25 feet or more. So I think that's kind of what we're talking about. If it can be clearly heard, and he clearly heard something at a distance of 100 feet, and I think that gives rise to at least reasonable suspicion or probable cause if that's necessary. And for those reasons,
I could interrupt you, sir. I'm going back to a question that Judge Petty asked originally. How does pulling someone over for arguably having too loud of music coming from his car evolve into a request to search the car and the ultimate finding of a firearm?
I'm not sure exactly the way it played out, but apparently after the car was stopped, he asked consent to search, which was granted, and during that consent search, some items were recovered in the vehicle.
Explain to me the process. Obviously, if he thinks that there's too loud of music, and we agree with, and if we agree with your argument that that gave him reasonable articulable suspicion to essentially investigate that particular offense, how does that evolve into a search for a gun? Setting aside the fact that it was a consent search, I'm not so much concerned about that. But how do we get there?
Well, I'm not sure what the police policy is in this case, but I don't think it's unusual for a police officer doing a lawful traffic stop to ask the driver if it's okay if he searches the vehicle. Obviously, the driver can say no, and in this case, there's no evidence that there's the reason he was stopped. There's evidence of that crime in the vehicle, so he would not have any probable cause to search the vehicle outside of some consent. So I don't think it's unusual that the police officer would ask for consent to search, but without consent, he would likely have no basis to search the vehicle.
So from a theoretical standpoint, the defendant may well have blown his case by consenting to the search. If he had not consented to the search, then would you suggest that there was basically no basis for the officer to actually conduct a search?
Right. I mean, again, the record we have here doesn't touch on a whole lot of that, but what I do know about the case, it does seem that without consent, there's no other reason for him to search the vehicle. Specifically, there'd certainly be no reason to search based on the noise violation. I don't know if something else happened during the stop which would give him probable cause, but based on this, there would be no reason to search the vehicle.
Mr. Stalin, just a question. When I was doing some research on my own on this issue, I noticed that there's a number of ordinances that use the same language. I think Williamsburg has one as an example, that include a definition of the phrase plainly audible. Has anybody checked to see if Richmond has a definition of the term plainly audible in its ordinances?
I did check the code, and it doesn't have a definition there in this particular section, and I tried to find a definition section in the ordinance to see if it was defined someplace else, and I was unable to do that.
Right, I couldn't find one either. So
the city code was kind of online in a weird way. It's like a PDF type thing, so searching it wasn't the easiest thing, but I could not find any definition of it in the city code. If the court has no further questions, I would ask the court to reverse and remand back to the trial court for further proceedings.
Very well. Thank you very much. We appreciate the argument by both counsel. The case is submitted, and the court will adjourn this hearing and go into conference. Thank you.
Thank you.